Welcome, and thanks for joining us in this fourth and final interview in the Special Bulletin Review on Attack Surface Management. I'm Justin Doubleday, a cybersecurity reporter at Federal News Network. So far, we've brought you interviews with Piyush Kumar, Director of the Office of Cybersecurity, Energy Security, and Emergency Response at the Department of Energy, Ron Ross, a Senior Fellow at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and Joe Forcade, Lead Cybersecurity Analyst at the Department of Veterans Affairs Enterprise Cloud Solutions Office. Today, I'm excited to have as a guest Ralph Mozios, the Chief Information Security Officer at the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Ralph, thanks for coming on the program.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for letting me chat with you today.
Absolutely. It's great to have you on. And Ralph, we're going to talk about zero trust and cybersecurity directives and all the fun things that a CISO has to be thinking about on a day-in and day-out basis. But first, I'm wondering, not everyone might be familiar with what FHFA is and what it does. Can you just give us a quick overview of your agency?
Absolutely. So the Federal Housing Finance Agency, or FHFA as we like to call ourselves, is responsible for the supervision, regulation, and housing mission oversight of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the Federal Home Loan Bank System, which constitutes 11 Federal Home Loan Banks and the Office of Finance. So since 2008, which is when we were established by law, FHFA has also served as the conservator of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So if you combine all of these entities together, it constitutes over $7.9 trillion in funding for the U.S. mortgage markets. So that's who we are.
Got it. And how did you find your way to FHFA? What's been your career path?
Well, I've been in and out of government for quite some time. My prior job was at the Securities and Exchange Commission, another financial regulator. So when this position opened up back in 2011, I took over as the first CISO. So that's how I found my way there. I was a senior compliance specialist at the SEC, and I was also the acting CISO and chief privacy officer for a period of time.
Got it. All right. Well, and so it's a really probably dynamic, fast-paced time to be working in cybersecurity in any sector, but certainly in the federal government with all the directives and strategies that have come out here, or especially over the last couple of years. What have been your top priorities at FHFA as CISO?
So yes, it is very exciting and at times very challenging, but it is a very exciting opportunity. So as far as my top priorities are concerned, I had a little help with this area since the president signed the executive order 14028 on improving the nation's cybersecurity. So this executive order was signed on May 12, 2021. And the objective of this executive order, which is in the title, is to improve the nation's cybersecurity and protecting federal government networks. So this executive order states that federal agencies must modernize, standardize some of their data sharing agreements, implement zero trust architectures, adopt more cloud computing, and much, much more. So my high level priorities are focusing on some of the zero trust initiatives, as well as improving some of our incident response capabilities. And these two go hand in hand, and I am sure we will discuss some of these in more detail.
Yeah, I mean, we've been covering the response to the executive order pretty closely at Federal News Network. And ever since that's come out, there's, of course, been this steady drip of deadlines and different mandates that have come out of OMB and CISA. One of the big things that has come out within the last year has been the federal zero trust strategy. That's really directed agencies to adopt zero trust architectures by the end of fiscal 2024. And of course, zero trust is a concept. But I'd love, as the expert, for you to kind of explain it for us and how you're thinking about it. What are some of your initial thoughts on zero trust and what this means for the federal government?
Absolutely. But let me start with a brief definition of what zero trust means, because it really does mean different things to different people. So let's just level set that. So zero trust is widely interpreted as trust no one, no asset, no system, or no device, which means that you have to continually authenticate these people and these systems. And zero trust is not a new concept. It has been around at least since, you know, the references back to 1994, but it really emerged out of the box when Google implemented a zero trust architecture in 2009. And then not long after that, Forrester Research coined the phrase zero trust model. And of course, there's been a lot more technical references on the subject. So going back to your original question, what are my initial thoughts on zero trust and what does it mean, at least to me and other federal agencies? I think there's a lot of value in implementing a zero trust model. It's going to better protect federal networks, and more importantly, it's going to secure the vast amount of data that resides on those networks. I also envision there will be shorter incident response and breach containment times. So, for example, according to the 2022 IBM Cost of a Data Breach report, the average time to identify and contain a data breach was 277 days. And that's a reduction of 10 days from the previous year. But the overall average time to identify and contain a data breach must go down. I know I am oversimplifying this issue, but 200 plus days is excessive, and we need to do something about that.
Yeah, I think that's a really great data point. I think a lot of people don't really understand that most of the times you do not know that a cyber attack is happening in real time. A cyber attack, I put in quotes, but a breach, takes a lot of time to uncover these days. And we saw that with the SolarWinds incident that affected multiple federal agencies, and that's of course why we have gotten the one of the big drivers behind the cybersecurity executive order and the federal zero trust strategy. But let's talk about your specific agency. How we talked about that big deadline, fiscal 2024. You have this strategy now in hand. How are you prioritizing zero trust at FHFA?
Absolutely. So zero trust, just like everything else in cybersecurity or IT, boils down to risk management. You will never have all the resources or funding to do what you want or need to do, so you have to prioritize your projects. So the first thing that I did was to task an independent consultant to conduct a zero trust gap analysis, which was based on the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agencies, or CISA, as we like to refer to them, as you mentioned, zero trust maturity model. The CISA maturity model is based on five pillars: identity, device, network, application, and data. So once this task was completed, we reviewed the gap analysis and identified some areas for improvement. I am not going to go too deep, but one area that we are looking at is what's called security orchestration, automation, and response, or what we refer to as SOAR. SOAR is a tool for the automated collection and flow of security threat data that really streamlines the responses to these security threats through some type of automation. And of course, the objective of SOAR is to streamline security operations. As a result of some of these zero trust projects, I expect there's going to be a lot more network traffic generated as a result of continuously authenticating these users and devices. The more that you can automate, the faster you can respond. And the federal government is taking a stand on this, right? The Office of Management and Budget issued a zero trust federal directive that mandates the implementation of these capabilities by the end of fiscal year 2024. So I had to act pretty quickly. And one thing that I did early on was to brief my leadership about this directive, and they gave me the funding to investigate these areas. I was very fortunate since this request was outside of a normal budget process, and I didn't have the luxury to wait until the following year to start the process.
Yeah, it definitely seems good to have the support of leadership when these cybersecurity directives are coming at you hot and heavy. But we're going to continue the conversation on zero trust and the different cybersecurity priorities across government and at FHFA. But first, we're going to take a short break. Again, my guest is Ralph Mosios, Chief Information Security Officer at the Federal Housing Finance Agency. I'm Justin Doubleday, and you're listening to Federal News Network. Welcome back to this special bulletin review on attack surface management here on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Justin Doubleday, and I'm speaking with Ralph Mosios, the Chief Information Security Officer at the Federal Housing Finance Agency, FHFA. And Ralph, we've covered zero trust as a concept and some specific efforts at your agency as well. That's really all about improving an organization's ability to prevent and, in case that fails, detect and respond to cyber incidents. Ever since the SolarWinds attack and then last May's cybersecurity executive order, there's really been a lot of focus on how agencies aren't just progressing towards zero trust in the future, but just doing some of the basics of blocking and tackling when it comes to cybersecurity and cyber hygiene so that you can more effectively respond to cyber incidents. How are you seeing the federal government progress when it comes to just responding to cyber threats?
There has absolutely been a lot more attention given to cybersecurity as a result of the executive order and the subsequent directives, but also what's going on outside our doors. Just listen to the news or read an article, and just about every day you hear about a data breach, a compromise, or yet another flavor of ransomware. And the board of directors and organizations are taking them seriously. So let me circle back to your question about responding to these cyber threats. There is a ROME directive, M2131, and the title states, improving the federal government's investigative and remediation capabilities related to cyber events. So this directive has very explicit actions with specific due dates that we must undertake. As an example, agencies must improve their logging capabilities. We have to capture more log events and retain those logs for much longer periods. And the goal is to provide better visibility into the network and be able to respond to cyber threats much faster. Just like I mentioned before, I believe there's going to be a lot more network traffic and logs to capture as a result of zero trust. We, and I am talking about the federal government, are making significant investments in these areas.
Yeah, Ralph, and for folks who might not know, can you just kind of explain what a log is and why it's important within the context of cybersecurity?
Well, certainly. Logs are different events that we capture from different devices. So we do capture a number of different type of log events. We capture logs from different systems, such as our endpoints, our servers, our databases, and this gives us insight into what is going on within those systems. So for an example, we capture user logins or failed logins. That tells us when the user tried to get in, but they couldn't get in. And that gives us some insight into what is going on into those actions. And again, we capture logs from all different types of events, and we have to maintain some of those logs for an extended period of time.
Got it. Now, that's a great explanation of why keeping these logs and retaining these logs are important. And you know, another thing that has really evolved over the last year in the federal cybersecurity world has been CISA's, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's binding operational directive process. And I'm wondering, do you, as a CISO who has to take point really on responding to these BODs, as they call them, at your agency, what are your thoughts on how CISA's BOD process has really changed and evolved in recent times?
Yes, CISA has been issuing binding operation directives since 2015. And these binding operation directives are mandatory actions that federal agencies must take. And yes, I do spend some time on making sure that we comply with those binding operational directives. So for example, binding operational directive 2201, and the title is reducing the significant risk of known exploited vulnerabilities. CISA manages a catalog of known exploited vulnerabilities that carry significant risk. So federal agencies must remediate them within a 2-week time period. So in addition to these binding operational directives, CISA started issuing emergency directives in 2019 to deal with significant issues that require immediate attention. And I think many of your listeners are aware or had to deal with some of the ramifications of SolarWinds, which you mentioned a few minutes ago, but also Log4j, and more recently, the VMware vulnerabilities. So taken together, these directives provide discrete actions that agencies must take to protect their networks. I think it's a great step forward for CISA, and I think the private sector should follow their lead. And I will share one point with my counterparts out there in Radio Land, and that is to leverage these as well as other OMB directives to get the resources that you need. Like I mentioned before, I briefed my leadership. They listened and they take cybersecurity very seriously. So they've given me, and I hope they will continue to give me, the resources that I need to be successful. So Justin, if you call me back next year and I am not around, you may wonder if I wasn't so successful, but hopefully we will pursue.
Yeah, hopefully. I don't think that'll happen. It sounds like you've got good support there and you're staying on top of these things. But, and so, you know, taking, you know, together the conversation around vulnerabilities and then logs, and you mentioned how there's going to be a lot more network activity that you need to track as a result of zero trust and continuously authenticating people. The themes that I'm seeing emerge, or the theme really, it seems to be around just getting visibility into what's happening on your network and being aware of where your weak spots might be. Is that fair to say?
Certainly is. You have to know what is on your network before you can secure it.
Ralph, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to something that just came out a little earlier this year. It was an Inspector General report on FHFA's binding operational directive process, the BOD process that we just ran down, raising a few issues there. I was wondering if you just give us an overview of that audit, what it found, and what you're doing in response.
Yes, thank you, Justin. The Office of Inspector General conducted an audit to determine whether FHFA complied with these binding operational directives. And during this audit, they identified three recommendations to improve the process. One recommendation states that FHFA did not include one required data element in its vulnerability disclosure policy, which we published on our public website, and that's the finding. The missing data element was the policy issuance date. So we added the issuance date and uploaded a new version. So that took care of that one. The second recommendation states, and I have to read this because it's rather long, FHFA did not configure all of its publicly accessible websites with a secure connection because these websites were managed by a third-party vendor and were not under FHFA's control. So let me provide a little background on this. As you probably know, DHS scans our public internet presence on a weekly basis, and then they send us a report at the beginning of the week. So the scan identified some websites that are not compliant with some of the protocols. So these websites were managed or currently are managed by a third party, which is out of our control. We can make the request to make a configuration change or a setting change, but that is something that we internally cannot implement. Even though there's a footnote that says that CISO was aware of the challenge of trying to bring one of them in compliance, we contacted the vendor and they did not have a solution. Since there was no viable solution, we should have documented the result in a risk memo. And that's what the recommendation explicitly states. And that is a process that we will follow going forward. So the last recommendation states, and again, I'm gonna have to read this one too, FHFA did not develop and maintain documented policies and procedures governing the process of implementing DHS BODs, choosing instead to rely on an informal, undocumented process. So going forward, I have to document a high-level process to address implementing the binding operational directives. The final point that I will make is that I spent a lot of time chatting with you about CISA and the OMB directives. So I, the deputy CISO, nor anyone else on my team will let these directives slip through the cracks.
Got it. So that's a great overview and response of how you're responding to the IIJA report, and really good overview, I guess, of how, you know, a small agency has to kind of grapple with some of these mandates and these different processes that I guess are mandated. Ralph, we know we've covered a lot of ground today. Do you have any final thoughts on, you know, cybersecurity going forward generally within the federal space and more specifically at your agency?
Certainly, yes. Thank you, Justin. So let me wrap up by saying a couple of things about Zero Trust. Zero Trust is a journey. It's not a race, right? It's going to take a lot of planning and resources to do it right. And it will require a cultural change since it will impact all end users. Sometime in a not too distant future, our end users may have to change the way they do business. What I mentioned earlier in our discussion was that Zero Trust means trust no one, no asset, no application, et cetera, right? We are going to have to continuously authenticate these users and these devices. So right now a user logs on through either the office or through VPN. So they're going to have to probably re-authenticate to the network much more often than they have done in the past. That's just an example of how I think they're going to have to change the way they do some of their business. And maybe they have to log in or authenticate using a different type of device that they normally don't use today.
Got it. Yeah, that's a great way to end the conversation, I think, really tying together the perspectives from security teams all the way down to the end user and how these different issues affect them. So you know, we've really covered the waterfront today, Ralph, from Zero Trust to the Cybersecurity Executive Order to CISA's binding operational directives and more. So thanks again for coming on the program and giving us the perspective from FHFA.
Thank you, Justin. I really enjoyed speaking to you.
And again, that's Ralph Mozios, Chief Information Security Officer at the Federal Housing Finance Agency. We talked about Zero Trust security and his agency's plans to get there, as well as a host of other cybersecurity issues. I'm Justin Doubleday, and you're listening to Federal News Network. For more on today's discussion, as well as others in this series on attack surface management, go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Looking Glass.